This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by the things we make. If you want to support Gregory Kamichuk, you can go to gmbkamichuk.ca. And if you think Justin Curry is just all right, you can go to chasingartwork.com.
Attention, citizens. It's time for Super Pulp Science.
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how a genre gets made. I am Gregory Kamichuk, your host. And if you are a longtime listener to the show, you've felt an emptiness within you, just as I have. A piece missing from Super Pulp Science that myself and producer extraordinaire Dan Vandenbalker,
hello Dan.
We've not been able to fill. But I just want you to know that he's back, dear listener. Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork, returns to the show after many misadventures. Thanks Woo-hoo. For coming back, Justin.
I'm back.
I thought you never returned.
You're welcome, yeah.
Was it something we did?
In part, yes. I just got back from the first convention of the year, which I turned into also a little bit of a vacation. So I just...
We were on vacation. No, that takes... We want to talk about hardship, about hardship. Suffering.
Okay, well, let me tell you about hardship and suffering. So I went down to the Seattle Comic-Con. And Seattle, for those of you who don't know, is right... It's like a three-hour drive from Vancouver. It's right nestled against the mountains. And I grew up on a ski hill, so I quite enjoy snowboarding. My girlfriend skis, and so we thought, rather than just going down for the Comic-Con, let's go down a couple days early, and we'll get some snowboarding and skiing in, and then we'll have the convention. So I don't know how many of the dear listeners have been flying these days, but it seems like every other flight that I go on, something goes awry. Either things are delayed, luggage doesn't show up. It's been a lot more stress than pre-pandemic, I want to say. And so originally we were supposed to fly down Saturday. Well, that flight is canceled, and now we're flying Monday, which is not really acceptable. That's not a slight delay. That's a couple days later. So now we lose out on cabin, we lose out on ski rentals, we lose, like, it's costly for that to happen.
And just as a quick aside, baggage handlers unions, we're on your side.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Right? Yeah, yeah. We're definitely on your side. We're just expressing the truths that come along with what that creates. Yeah.
The whole industry is messed up right now.
Yeah.
So rather than flying out on Monday, we got a hold of Air Canada's, can we fly out Sunday instead? So we don't even later Saturday, help us get there so we don't lose on all these things. And so they moved us from Monday to Sunday morning. And then that Sunday morning flight was also canceled, and it moved back to Monday evening. And so again, we phoned the airlines and got them to move us to a later Sunday flight. And we actually got there. But this has now been 2 days and an accumulative 8 hours of on hold with Air Canada to get this flight.
Over
2 days. Between the two of us.
A full day shift.
A full day shift of being in travel limbo, right? Like, we're not sure if we're leaving tonight, tomorrow morning, in 2 days. Like,
can't make up.
You can't relax. You can't just, you know, you're in this constant state of stress. And so that was how it started. And we ended up getting to Vancouver and having to spend the night there and then flying to Seattle the next day. We missed out on a day of skiing. We missed out on a couple different things. It was a rocky start. But thank God we went down early and not right before the show, like my friend Quirkylicious.
Oh, no, Drake.
Got to Seattle after a couple delays to arrive with only two of his three bags, and then after coming to the show and setting up what he could, having to go back to the airport where the third bag had finally arrived and set up at the show like 4 hours into the actual show, which is the most stressful thing as somebody who does this thing, right? Like, being late to set up at a show, losing hours of sales, like, it's not cheap to fly to these cities, stay there. You're spending a lot of money to book that space. And so to lose half a day of sales. Like, oh man, just the worst.
So to mitigate it though, I'll mention this to the dear listener. I've been purposely avoiding U.S. shows for the last year, and I likely will for this year for all of these reasons. But I will say,
I don't think this was a U.S. thing. The customs are so excited that we're coming over.
No, they are thrilled.
Customs is like they're overjoyed. That has been a drastic change in like the behavior of customs officers.
They got
like,
lonely.
Yeah, I think so. They're just like, what are you doing? That's oh, you're going skiing? That's awesome. You go have fun.
And like, they miss when it was so busy that they'd just be looking for criminals.
That's right. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is that everything of value to you was sort of with you. You know, your relationship on the road with you, your business in your pocket, right? You were all there. So like everything, if I had been delayed a few days away, the accumulative buildup of stress of the home life of like all of the things that go along with childcare and management and all of those things would have, I would have lost it. I would have been that guy like just screaming in the airport, right beyond his own control.
Yeah.
So it happened to the nicest one of us, right? Yeah.
So when we finally got to the ski hill, you'll enjoy this. So again, I grew up within eyeshot of a ski hill. I snowboarded like four times a week. I lived at a ski hill, snowboarded constantly. Darcy, my girlfriend, knows how to ski, used to ski when she was younger. You know, she is familiar with the mechanics of skiing. The ski hill that we went to, we didn't really look into it too carefully. We just saw that it was an hour drive from Seattle. You drive, it was like an hour west. You're in the mountains. Suddenly there's 8 feet of snow. The weather's beautiful. Mountains everywhere.
So you have a lifetime of experience snowboarding, and she has hope and gravity on her side.
Which was great because the ski hill that we went to consisted of only black diamonds with occasional double black diamonds. And blue squares, like the more, for those of you who don't know, black diamonds mean expert runs.
It's like a circle is like for kids.
Green circle is easy runs, which there were none of. And blues are kind of medium.
Yeah.
The only blues on this hill, you had to go through a black diamond to get to.
It had a rest zone for you after.
So Darcy and I would see each other in the morning and then wave goodbye and go our separate ways because there was no staying together on these hills.
Did she survive? Like, did you come? I noticed that.
She survived.
She's okay.
Yeah, okay.
There. How was the show? How was the actual show?
Yeah. Okay.
Enough of your vacationing. Listen, people don't listen to this show because they want to hear that Justin's having a wonderful time on vacation. They want the nitty-gritty of show life.
Yeah. So Seattle has always been one of like the top shows in the States. When Gregory and I go to the States for shows, it's a lot of extra efforts and logistics and all these things. So we try to make it the bigger shows. And some of the bigger ones are like
and
New York.
And steamed pork buns.
And I had some. Oh. So good.
This is the Emerald City Comic Con?
This is the Emerald City Comic Con, which is, there's like Chicago is a big one. New York has a big one. You know,
San Diego.
Yep. So yeah, pick a big city. They have a big show.
And Emerald City, just for the dear listener too, it has a really big community of, I guess maybe it's because of the coast that it's on. All the comic people that don't make the Portland show, they hit the Seattle show. And for those of you who don't know, Portland is a huge comic city in America. And so a lot of those people use Emerald City as their like meetup zone. Mm-hmm. So there's all the A-listers show up there. It's a murderer's row of talent, usually in the artist alley there.
The artist alley is intimidating.
I am Madame Petralini. These children are in my circus.
Children? They're monsters.
So this year, they have a new convention center, which is kitty corner to the old convention center.
Oh.
And that was kind of my first bit of disappointment, is the old convention center is carpeted. There's this huge archway of glass that you walk through in exhibitors. Like it's a beautiful convention center.
Trumpeting angels sing you to your rest.
A little bit, yeah. And the new one has a beautiful first floor and then a massive basement that is just an industrial cement block.
Oh no.
And that's where the exhibitors were, in this nondescript cement room with air ducts. You could have plopped, like you could have told me this was any city And I wouldn't have known because it just looks like every other convention basement you've ever been in.
So wait, compare this to the Toronto show, which is also like three levels down in the sub-basement.
Feels like it's like Toronto has more character than this. This
wow,
was,
okay.
So, okay, the other thing was this convention center is so new that when we were setting up on Wednesday, we had been there, us exhibitors who were setting up, had been there just as long as the employees of the convention center. So nobody knew what the hell was going on, where anything was, how anything worked. We were all discovering it together. So setup went fine. We figured everything out. I got lost.
And then it also
elevators.
Has that polymer smell. New builds, they all just are like full of all those glue mixtures.
There was definitely, spray paint, fresh paint.
New building smell.
New building smell.
Yeah. It has another name. Poisonous.
Okay.
Industrial.
Yeah. That's right.
So I don't know if it was the new convention center or maybe just, you know, people are starting to feel the tightening of their wallets because of inflation and whatnot, but it was a good show. It was a good show. But in my mind, I have not been to Seattle since 2019, and this is usually one of my bigger shows, so I was expecting like fireworks. And it wasn't.
Oh, and you had so much new stuff, which is
so much
frankly
stuff.
Some
Nobody
of your best
seen,
work ever.
Yeah, I was so excited about all my new work. You know, the pent up people haven't seen me, so now I finally get to get back to these fans. So I had very high expectations, and like by no means was this a bad show, but in my mind, this was going to be like an amazing show, and it was not that.
See, I didn't have any FOMO. I thought I would. I was talking to Lyndon about this while we were at a little, very little show, a little one-day show that happened.
We'll do a
postmortem on that, maybe at the end of this episode. But what I will say is, while I was watching some of those other guests of Emerald City posting about it, most of them posting completely sold out. Can't believe it. You know, like, so whatever happened there, your description of it, some people were having the best show they had ever had.
See, I talked to a lot of people, a lot of big booths, a lot of big artists, a lot of small artists. I feel like when people post stuff like that, that's more
just,
advertising.
Stomping?
Yeah.
Stomping their feet.
There was a lot of upset vendors.
Really?
A lot of people not coming back for next year. A lot of grumblings. They only sold out the one day.
Like, is it because they seem like there's low traffic or what was it?
So one thing I did notice, because this is usually a show I need two people for sure.
Yeah.
And I didn't really need two people at this show. Like it was steady.
And it's expensive.
It's an expensive one.
Show to attend.
It was steady. But I noticed a lot of people walking around not carrying anything. People were just not scooping things up.
Yeah, and that could be inflation. It could be
the cost to enter is so high.
Yeah, so they're just happy to be there and to be part of the experience, but they're not buying as much as they used to.
So, like, and in my close group of friends,
so good
are people
for the planet, but bad for Justin.
My close group of friends are people who do this for a living. They do like 50 plus conventions a year. They all had down years,
right?
And so if they are not having a good show, I can't imagine somebody I've never heard of,
right.
You know, like having an amazing.
But I also wonder if, you know, because those people I'm talking about, and I'll leave their name. I was going to name some names, go through my Instagram, but maybe now I won't since we've cast this dispersion. But I will say this, that many of them are independent creators doing a lot of indie books. And so selling out of a suitcase full of books is a lot, in some ways, easier, right? Because you don't have as much stock and there's not as much. They're arriving as a guest and they're bringing a suitcase or two full of things. And so if they sell out, that could be why the overhead and the amount of customer per hour is much lower for them generally.
And, like, there's different qualifiers for success, right? Like, I had a great time. I had great interactions. I met some amazing people. I got some business cards, some really exciting things. Like, all of that was successful. But just like, if we're going to talk about crunching the numbers of how the show went for sales, like based on other years, it wasn't as good as other years. And I was expecting it to, like, knock those other years out of the water. Was that's kind of where my lament is coming from.
What kind of like safety policies did they have in place? Do you think that played any?
Yeah, like Seattle's a very liberal place, and so that was the other thing. Like maybe people are still a little skittish about getting together in huge groups. Seattle Comic Con this is its first year kind of fully back. They've had two shows since the event. One was kind of a half event, and the other was also kind of reduced capacity, and they moved it to a different time of year. So it's only actually been 5 months.
They've been more cautious than other.
They've been more cautious, but that was another factor. It's only been 5 months since the last Seattle Comic Con.
Well, that's too soon.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, maybe too. People have kind of seen the watered down version of this show in recent memory. Yeah. So we're not ready to spend money again. We experienced this in Vancouver, did this. They moved their dates around. They had a November show, and then they moved it to February.
And I heard, I'll change the names to protect the innocent or just leave them out entirely. But talking to a few people who are running events on the big convention level, explaining that what happens is you will put your money down, you'll hold your spot. And now there's a policy where a big convention center will hold the spot unless it's outbid. That you can be outbid. You can say, like, here's my money down, but if someone's willing to pay 25% over, you'll get bumped.
Wow.
Right? Which is horrifying.
Yeah. And then also a thing can happen where if there is a government-sanctioned event or gathering, so like an immunization thing or whatever, they'll bump whatever dates they want in lieu of that.
So I'm sure you get like the, you know, whatever it is, $300,000 to $500,000 deposit back. Yeah. But you have booked all kinds of things
based on
this weekend that now, poof.
Yeah, it disappears. So I wouldn't want to be a showrunner right now.
Yeah. That just seems like sketchy business practices, honestly.
Yeah. Well, it's like an ex, and I mean, these are all second and third hand accounts. So those of you who are out there running convention centers, and I know many of you listen to the podcast, who want to, you know, reach out and say, that's not how it is, this is how it really is. I'd love to hear about it. But I wonder if we're just getting into that. You know, if you've ever gone to a amusement park recently, there's like your ticket price and then your ticket price for cutting the line.
Right. The fast pass.
Right. And that's become so much a part of consumer culture that it's starting to like sort of slither up into other avenues of business where it's like, this is your price unless someone else can beat you, and then it's theirs.
It's Google's fault. I blame Google because that's how they sell their ads, Google ad space. Like it's always about, it always goes to the highest bidder. Those clicks, you're just setting up, when you like bid for clicks, you're setting a range and it automatically goes to the highest bidder.
How are you, Madam Tetralini? Big crowd tonight.
Something that was really interesting in the show that we noticed is, and maybe this has happened before, but it's never been on our radar, is they invited influencers. So if Darcy kind of looked into this while we're at the show, because we were trying to figure this out. There was people with these weird badges that said content creator on it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have booths.
Right.
They were flown out and got to come to the convention. And to be one of these people, you had to qualify. You had to like kind of go through this form, and you had to have over a quarter of a million followers on either Instagram or TikTok or YouTube or whatever.
And the show would bring you out.
The show would bring you out. And your whole job was just to walk around the show, buy stuff, do your thing. You were there like marketing force on the floor.
I wonder if that's a recovery tactic. If they're recognizing and seeing that the numbers are not what they were, and this is them putting some money down and putting some effort in to help grow the show beyond its
normal. Yeah, like if you want to buy an ad that's going to reach a million people, how much is that going to cost you versus I put this influencer in a hotel?
Although, to be fair, if it's an Instagram thing, less than 10% of the people see it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not, even if you have a million followers, 100,000 people might see it, and then only if they happen to click what you liked to click.
I suspect this is just a way to try and reach other fans of other things. Like this is the way things are going with social media, is that there's a ton of people with like smaller fan bases. So they're not like a big Star Trek actor or anything like that, but they will bring out a certain amount of people who would love to come and meet them. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And but it doesn't cost as much because there's no appearance fee. It's just probably hotel, flight, and maybe a small fee for appearing.
These people weren't like at a booth for people to meet. They were just like given passes to like go explore the show.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like I feel like that's something where they're seeding for a future audience, like people who are watching from home, that is happening, are more inclined to buy a ticket for next year.
Next year, yeah, that's right. They'll see that and then be, oh, that looks like fun, and then they'll check it out for sure. But it's very, like, for things like TikTok and Instagram, to have 250,000 followers, you know, those people could be all over the world. Like, you're not going to get a lot of people in Seattle, you know what I mean, who are going to come. So it's more about awareness than it is about actually driving attendees.
And, like, to that point, like, we've talked about this on the podcast before, is, like, you know, your online numbers do not result in actual tangible actions, right? Yeah. You could have 2 million followers on TikTok and you'd be like, buy my chapstick. You're not necessarily going to get 2 million sales, right?
Right.
And so I had
coming to, soon, Chasing Artwork chapstick.
I could design a good chapstick.
Are your lips dry and cracked?
But I had some guy like who had one of these content creator badges and was really, dropping his numbers, and I was starting to get the sense that he was trying to get free stuff or a discount or something. He's like, I run this kind of channel, I get these kinds of numbers, and I just did like a video for this guy, and he's like, lots of sales for him. I'm like, cool, buddy. Like,
so he's trying to say he'll do a video for you and get you sales if you give him something for free.
Like, he didn't say that, but he's like, I just made a video for somebody else and they got a lot of sales. I'm like, sure he did.
It's like, you're like, prove it.
So he made, I don't have TikTok, so I can't check.
Yeah.
I don't know if this person did this or what.
Well, how can you confirm the sales part of it, right?
Yeah. I didn't suddenly get flooded in sales the next hour. Yeah. But yeah, just that it felt a little bit like, hey, restaurant, I'm a food critic.
Yes.
Right. It had that kind of vibe to it, which I didn't like.
Interesting. You know, the only person that can pull that at my booth are librarians.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When librarians show up and they're like, oh, yeah, I happen to be a librarian. I'm like, what, really? Here's some free books. And they're usually like, what are you talking about? I'm like, libraries are amazing and we should give you some free stuff.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this podcast and you're going to try and trick me by pretending to be a librarian, I have a way to prove it.
So Craig's about to meet a lot of librarians on the next convention.
Yeah.
Okay. So Seattle, that was that.
Come on. That's it? That's all you got for Seattle?
That's it? That was great. The other thing is this first show of the year, right? So I usually have a couple new pieces to present. And
Dozy Diners, you said.
Dozy Diners killed it. My original stuff killed it. Of the new pieces, none of them, usually one is a dud, right? Of like first time.
There's always one.
There's always one dud.
The ugly duckling that you just are sad that's in the nest. Still.
Yeah. And of my couple new pieces, no duds. They were all like, they performed really well and my book sold out and I was really happy with how everything went. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, now that we know that if someone says sold out, it's just for the clicks.
I do think like that's you know, a bit of a shout out. Like, look at how great I'm doing. I sold out. Thanks for everybody for the amazing show.
Right.
I know for a fact people who do that after having an abysmal show
really
will post on social media.
I've only ever told
thanks
the truth
for
with
like
my sellouts.
The great success.
Right.
Right. You know? Well, you want to present a positive side of it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't like lying.
No.
Like, if I have a bad show, I just don't post about it.
That's right.
I'd rather say nothing than something that's a lie.
True. It's even more potent when you know everybody around you had a bad show. Yeah. If you post that you had an amazing show, it's a bit of a flex, right?
But also, just to make other people feel bad?
Or to make yourself feel good.
Oh, my gosh. Why not?
The illusion of success.
Go stand in a sunbeam and, you know, eat some ice cream and you'll feel good. You don't have to lie about something on social media to feel good. Or if you do, dear listener, I think perhaps you need a break from your social media account.
That could be an indication.
That's what's doing it. So here in humble Winnipeg, the people who used to run the Big C4 show.
Hold on, you're clicking.
Let me just... We used to run the Big C4 show, which was our big comics event here, who have stepped back and the Winnipeg Comics group has come over and taken that show over. They still run a number of single day events.
Two or three one day events scattered throughout the year.
Comics, toy shows, that sort of thing.
They feel like kind of a throwback to what shows used to be, right? They're in a hotel, smaller
this one's at
floor
a convention
print.
Center. This is no guest. Photo center, no guest. Really low cost, like $5 or something for if you wanted to come to it. And as a result, very busy, like really well attended show. Like it was beyond my expectations, just like the last time they did one of those.
So to compare, I think Seattle was $66 to get into.
Right, so versus $5. American. But also
American.
Yeah, wow, that's a lot. Yeah. So it was low cost entry, and you know, it's just essentially a big collection of comic sellers and toy resellers and things like that. So if you're not into that kind of stuff, there's no celebrities to job.
No, but that's a big draw for, and that's something that I think that is almost, I don't want to say it's overshadowed by the artists at conventions, but the artist has grown so big now, Artist Alley, is that it's almost as big as the vendors when you look at the bigger cons.
Love it.
And so, and it's something that's the only place you can get this stuff, this is all like used things, collectibles, comics, toys. It's either in person at events like this or online, right? That's really the only other place you can go out and find this stuff.
Help me, which was the Transformer that was the direct ripoff of, not ripoff, but the reskin of the Robotech? Robot.
Oh, Jetfire. Yeah.
Jetfire. I saw this guy walk by with a Jetfire in a bag. Like all the pieces looked like good. It was a opened Jetfire, but it also had the little booklet with it.
Yeah.
Oh.
And you never saw a guy more happy.
That's a good. That's a good
with
find.
His purchase. He came
I
in
want
like
a Jetfire.
Yeah. Half hour after the show, I see him come. He walks by, and I just look at it, and I'm like. Robotech thing, and then I realized no, that's the hard to find one, and I just like I pointed at it as he walked by, and he looked at me and I looked at him, and we understood.
When it comes to looking for things like that, you don't know what you want until you find it. Like, that's what I love about going to those things. It's the treasure hunting aspect of it. It's like going out and finding something that, I mean, you can, sure, you can search for that to buy online if you want to. And I'm sure you could pay whatever and find that. But it's not as fun as finding it in the wild, as coming across it at somebody's table. So that's what I really like about those events.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I like about them and what I found really nice is that one day event, local in your city. We have a studio here and we do like First Fridays, we do stuff like that. But there are plenty of people who will reach out to me and say, like, I'd love to pick up this book. What's the best way to support it? What's the best way to get it? And I will usually say, well, you can get it on my website, you can get it at McNally, or I'm at this show coming up. If you want to come and get a sketch in it, it doesn't cost you any more. And that show is a nice one. I sent put it on a number of people's radar because the cost of entry is $5. They're gonna get $5 worth of adventure at the show.
Yeah.
And they can come pick it up directly.
And your booth, like you put on pretty much, like not quite the same, but almost the same booth that you would have at the main Comic-Con, right?
Yeah.
You're bringing maybe not as much
of
everything.
Just not as much.
But you have some of everything, right? Yeah. So they get like, they get a real taste of your booth. I wanted to know about, so I sent a brand new proxy to this booth.
Linden. Uh-oh. Linden, do you want to? No, he's waving. He's like making the I'd rather die face.
So I didn't want to ask Linden directly. I wanted to ask you, Gregory, from the sidelines, how did Linden do slinging my stuff?
You want me to give his report card?
Yes.
His performance review while he's sitting over there lettering my comics and uploading them for print?
Oh, look, a spelling mistake.
Oh, my goodness. You're putting me in a compromising position. Because,
well, how? Let me ask you this: how were your sales from the show?
Question.
No, I don't know.
He doesn't know yet.
Okay,
he doesn't know yet. We haven't done that math. He's just an hour.
Oh, okay, you just gotten back. Okay, cool.
No, I've been back, but I
haven't had a chance to look at that yet.
Unloaded everything.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So, here's the thing that I will say about Linden doing shows. I told him, I'm going to take pictures of you while you're working, and I'm going to send it to Justin. So I'm going to keep Justin apprised of your behavior. And so he was like, gave me this look like, how dare you, sir? But also, yes. But the best thing about it, that I'll say, is that came in, doesn't need any prompting to just take inventory of everything that was at the show, start putting it up. And then when he had some questions, what the best part to me was, I'm like, Justin has sent proxies with me before. These questions that Linden has are not the kinds of things Justin would leave out. And so I would just say, I'm sure he packed it with no knowledge whatsoever whether you did or not, just my confidence that you probably packed it. So when he asked questions, I said, you probably packed it in one of those bags. And sure enough, 2 minutes later, Linda would be like, yeah, here it is. Right? So whatever you normally do, whatever checklist you're using to prepare your proxies, I think works. So that's, I think that's a level one. And then the other side of it, it was busy, but not crushingly busy. So one person can definitely handle that kind of thing, ask any questions that are necessary. And I think he acquitted himself very well.
It's a great, good proxy. And this is a great warm-up. So now when I send him to a show that is crushingly busy,
that's right.
He'll be prepared.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, the hardest part to me, okay, I won't speak for Justin Bieber. The hardest part for me about setup when I first started was, did I remember everything? And there would be that little like checklist of anxiety of like, if I forgot any of these one things, the rest of the show will be affected by it. Hmm. All that stuff was packed. You had it all on the list. You're good enough at doing shows that anything that's necessary is there.
It also helped packing for Seattle and the show at the same time.
Of course.
So I got to doubling up on everything.
And then it's easy to say Lyndon is a new proxy, but Lyndon is a writer in his own right.
Yeah.
And his own... does booths.
Man tables at Toronto and Winnipeg. He's done busy shows before.
So and he's a personable late. Fellow mm-hmm. and capable of laughing at any mistake that he makes and like making the customer feel like whatever the failing is, don't worry, we'll solve it and here's how we can solve it. So all of those things I think were really good. The problem is if he gets too good at working at your booth, what is going to happen when he's competing against you at the booth next door? Are you training your own competitor?
Taking notes of all the good tricks that we've
that's
picked
right.
up over the years.
Because there's a lot of tricks in that mm-hmm. bag of yours, right? Right.
Stolen
down to
from artists all over the world.
So overall, I think it was a good test
good.
Of the proxy system.
How she got that way will never be known. Some say a jealous lover. Others that it was the code of the freak.
Right beside us, Jonathan Allery gave us a heads up. Now, Jonathan, mm-hmm. if you're listening, I know you listen to the podcast and you have said to us in public a few times, you know, thanks for the heads up. This is our tangible way of saying to you, thanks for the heads up. Single-use plastic, through many of the single-use plastic distributors, have been discontinued. The bags we use at our shows are all being discontinued.
Yeah, like this happened like early February.
Yeah, and so having trouble meeting that supply or whatever. So those of you who are listening to this podcast as a way of prepping for shows and are used to the kind of sleeves you put around prints that you're used to getting with a little adhesive strip at the top and it's 12 by 18, those are all being discontinued all over the place. And
in
so,
Canada.
Yes.
Yes.
Now is the time to find your paper alternative.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. So what's right? that? I was because we this news dropped and it hasn't really quite seeped into shows
yet. They've been trying to re-up and there wasn't any. And
they're hitting the grocery stores first, but it's going to go through everything else. I didn't even think of that. What about comic books?
Right.
Like in the bags?
Yeah.
No, that's going away.
Okay. So Gregory, you and I sell 12 by 18 paper prints.
Yeah.
Back in the day, before I had bags, I used to roll them with mm-hmm. a little elastic band around them.
People hated that.
Yeah. There's paper bags, but those are still like...
if they get wet, you're still ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's...
and like
we
live in a city where snowstorms and rainstorms happen, and we go to... can you imagine going to Vancouver and being like, sorry, I don't have a plastic bag for
right.
you?
But, okay, so what's happening at the grocery store is people are bringing their own bags. So our customers now, is it on them to start bringing their own tubes or their own, you know, canvas bags for artwork? Are they going to stop relying on us to supply them with the packaging?
I mean, ultimately, for the planet's sake, that is what I want. But I also don't want someone to get home and then their print is ruined. So I don't know what the middle ground is.
Well, there's two things here. Number one, you guys sell the prints in a plastic sleeve, do you not? And then also put it into a bag as well?
No. They go in the sleeve or the bag is the way.
That's it. There's just one piece of paper or whatever.
Mine have handles.
Yes, and it says Chasing Artwork on it. You see them all over the convention. Yeah. It's great advertising.
I might have ordered a big chunk right before this news broke. So well, I have
so
like...
so right now, somewhere in the widening gyre of the Pacific Ocean is a sea turtle choking on a Chasing Artwork branded bag.
It's a quality bag that's being used for something else.
Yeah. says the sea turtle. Yeah. That's the... Right.
Well, I get, yeah. So it is going to have to be a paper, some kind. Yeah. That's what we're getting. We have shitty paper straws we have to deal with. We have to deal with shitty paper bags. Yeah.
And I think
that's the
good.
Cost of it.
But this is just like a, I think, this is the bell ringing, right?
Yeah.
We have to make a change. A change is necessary. We have too many single-use plastics, and we definitely are purveyors of such things in our business, and we've got to make a change. So if you are listening to this podcast and you have a good solution for a recyclable paper alternative that maybe has like a wax, maybe.
Well, I think the wax makes it unrecyclable.
Now
that's why Tim Hortons cups can't be
unrecyclable, but compostable. You can still compost.
Oh, that's
with
true.
Wax. It still breaks down. Like the problem is that plastic is a right a forever thing.
Yep.
Get into weight as well, right? It's
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
What I would do if I was a convention is I would look at giving away a reusable bag of some kind that you can carry the prints in.
But if you do that every time you have a convention, then now you're giving out 60,000 bags that then...
Yeah, it's a problem I have because I order my groceries through Instacart. And so I now, because I get groceries delivered, get a new batch of reusable bags. I have so many reusable bags at home.
So that's not solving
and that's not
now.
No, that, it's just creating more. Honestly, it's more waste, but this is what humans do. So I don't know. We overcompensate. Okay, fine. We're not going to make plastic bags. We're making all these ones that I'm going to feel bad about throwing out because they're made out of fabric. So I don't throw them out, but they're just sitting in my house doing nothing.
This is what humans do.
Yeah.
Also, if you need a good reusable bag, please contact Dan Vadimon Kerr.
I give them away and everything I give away in these bags. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, it is, but it's happening and it's going to you're going to see that changing over the next year or so, I think. And it's just in Canada, though. So we won't see it in the U.S.
No.
Just in Canada.
If there's any place it'll happen last, it'll probably be the United States of America.
Yeah.
If they can't stop shell casings from falling, can they stop reusable plastic bags? Probably not.
No.
I'm trying to bring it back to a lighter note after that dark turn. I just took it. Help me.
Killing
dead turtles. And gun violence here on Super Pulp Science is how we're welcoming back Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork. Here at the studio, while you've been gone, Justin, I want you to know that we've been making comics. We left the comics making machine on while you were gone. And collectively in the studio, there are at least 5 or 6, maybe 7 new titles of things that are going to come churning out of here.
You want me to make one, but I don't want to make a single issue comic. I want to make more posters.
I want to make
more intricate paintings.
And you have a 250-page graphic novel you're working on, so I guess we can let it slide.
Yes.
Guess we can let it slide. That's enough for now. For now.
I'm also, I'm more and more in love with my, our printer now does 12 by 24 sheets, which is this skinny, long piece that's...
I haven't found the right composition to fit
it. Oh, my God.
So I don't have it.
It's like all I want to do now is make prints to that size, and customers are liking them. I'm loving the format. It's like every piece I come up with now...
Are you saying your prints are longer than mine and customers like it more? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. that's hurtful. That's hurtful. I got a new sports car, though.
Okay.
Your prints can be whatever...
It's what your single issue comics have.
That's right.
Yeah. What's let's burn some fossil fuels. Oh,
it's really hard for a couple of nerds to be bending about like toxic masculinity terms, even as a joke, because it doesn't really work here. When Ollie and the Missing Who's is staring at me from that shelf. Oh my gosh. Well, I think that about does it for your return to the podcast, Justin. Thank you so much for deigning to come down from the ski hill.
You guys are lucky.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a blessing in disguise that you had delayed. It was delayed because maybe you avoided an accident or something.
That's what I always like to think is any big upset in that is something horrible happened and I time traveled back. And this is actually the best way, the best thing
it's
to happen.
The best of a bad situation.
Yes.
In
had I arrived
timeline,
early, something much worse would have happened.
That's right.
Yeah.
Your body parts are strewn across the ski hill amongst your luggage in another timeline.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And a sea
in
turtle is wearing your face in the middle of that. That is what's happening. This has been Super Pulp Science, where we do talk about how genre gets made. Welcoming back Justin Curry to the podcast. This is Gregory Kamichuk encouraging you to join the fight. and make comics.